slant it to live righteously.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 181, where in the second and third block, we talk to Nikki Yeast, who used to be an adult dancer. I mean, not like in a dancer who's an adult. You'll get what I'm talking about. That's the second and third block of episode 181. All right, so sitting down right now with Tom Clark and Janaea Gadet about a film called Elder. And we talked about this here a couple weeks ago in the Cultural Hall. For some reason, I'm not sure, maybe it was when the movie was first made, or maybe it was some recognition that the story had gotten in the press. But if I may summarize it in what I know about it, or recall from when we brought it up, it was a story about a Mormon missionary who falls in love on his mission. That's pretty about as basic as we go, but I have the opportunity to talk to you guys about the film. Now, Janaea is the director of this film, and then Tom is the subject. Tom is the elder from this.
That's
so,
correct.
Tom, let's go with you first. Give us a time frame of this, because you aren't 19 or 21. I can tell that by looking at you. No offense, of course.
Taken. This took place 1974 and 1975.
Okay.
I was sent back to Italy, where I grew up, to serve a Mormon mission. It's a complicated story getting out there, but the fact is, once there, I did meet Johnny, who was, like most young college students at that time, a very committed activist communist. So the communist Mormon thing was an interesting point of departure for conversation.
For sure. I want to stop, though, real quick, and two things. One, have you scoot closer to the microphone? But then also, two, I want to talk about, you said it's a longer, much complicated story. I'm interested there before we go into all that, because typically I think that you don't typically serve where you're from, an LDS mission. So, so I'm intrigued. You don't look Italian.
I'm not.
You certainly don't sound Italian. So born and raised in Italy and then going...
Però sono italiano quando parlo italiano. I'm native in that sense. In other words, I was young enough that the Italian just took instantly, as it does with most kids.
So what are your folks doing in Italy? That
My dad was designing and installing telecommunication sites for NATO.
Okay.
He was under contract with them, and his headquarters was in Rome.
Cool.
So we went to join him after he'd been there for a year, moving there from Alaska. So it was quite a switch.
Those aren't the same, huh? Alaska and Italy?
Yeah, I don't remember much about Alaska, but except lots of snow.
Yeah.
And there was no snow in Rome except once. It snowed in Rome for the first time in 75 years while we were living there in the 60s.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was crazy. There's some very famous pictures that Gina Lollobrigida did of priests in the Vatican having a snowball fight.
Oh, my gosh.
It was quite an event. But no, I don't know how that ended up. My twin brother and I both went back to Italy. He's about to leave in another week to go back and be a missionary again there.
So your brother's still active
in the
church?
Very much so.
And twin identical?
Fraternal.
Fraternal, okay.
Yeah.
So then being raised in Italy, just a tremendous amount of culture, I would think. And then you made your way to the States so that you could be called back. Talk about that.
We moved back, the family moved, not back, but moved to the U.S., to Idaho in the late 60s.
For dad's work?
Yes. And for some family health reasons and things. I did not want to go on a mission.
Okay.
My brother went right on schedule shortly after the first year of school.
So you're that BYU. Twin. Is that
I'm the bad twin.
That's how the black twin. Yeah. Why can't you be more like
your brother?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of things going on, and I didn't want to go on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
It I didn't so much have issues with the church. I just didn't want to go on a mission.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, and it's not being doing your life for 2 years.
Yeah, and even that, it went deeper, and it took a long time to understand why, but I just didn't want to go. And the pressure was not so much from anybody in the church or anybody at BYU. It was from my mom. Mm-hmm. My dad was not Mormon. My mom was. And the pressure was extreme. And at the time, I started having conspicuous feelings, falling in love with other guys, which is something that had always happened, but now it was taking on a new feeling. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my mom about it, and I ended up seeing a psychiatrist at BYU who put me on Thorazine,
which is
known as chlorpromazine. Also, it's an antipsychotic drug that essentially levels a person out to zombie-like status.
They give it to people that are like schizophrenic. It's a pretty intense drug.
Okay.
Yeah, it's when you hear referred to the Thorazine shuffle, that's what you see in sanatoriums where people are just wandering around, you know, like zombies.
Yeah.
It's an extreme drug. I think for the most part it's not used anymore.
I would hope not.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, it's...
How was your experience with that?
It was horrific. I was already in trouble emotionally, and after I started taking the Thorazine, I just wandered around campus crying most of the time. Mm. I was unable to sleep. I was unable to do anything. It essentially just zeroed me out. And in that state, my mom was finally able to force the issue to get me to go on a mission. That was, you know, well into my 20s at that point. Mm. But I was just, there was nothing left to work with. And that's how I ended up on a mission, because I really didn't want to go. And it had nothing to do with the church per se. I just didn't want to go.
But you went.
I went. And when I met Johnny, 6-7 months into my mission, everything became clear. And I threw away the Thorazine. I stopped taking it. But the first 6 months of my mission, I was still a walking dead person.
Yeah, it seems like such a difficult thing to even function as a human being under. I mean, talk about the shuffling, and then you talk about the effects that it had. I would think that it would be really hard to... Missionary work is hard being not on Thorazine. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And I was back where I grew up. And I got a lot of attention because of my ability with the language, which for me was silly because I'd always spoken Italian, so it wasn't like I was doing anything special, but I was aware of all the attention I was getting because of that. And I had an ease with the Italian people that was different than the other missionaries.
You know the culture. You're not a foreigner.
It was home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't a foreigner.
How did it start? How did the relationship start? You said it happened about 6-7 months in. Was it we're knocking doors and
no.
All of a sudden he comes to the door and you go, you know, it's
well, this
one of
is
those
all
things.
Kind
There's
of
an
told.
Old Solo Mio going on in the background. It's like, yes, okay.
I don't want to give away too much of what's in the film, obviously, but he and some friends came to a meeting.
Okay. Curious about the church?
Curious because they'd seen these missionary guys out standing on the streets. And
I guess I wonder, because I had a mission companion who, he had a girlfriend on his mission. Mm-hmm. We should point out this is a man you're speaking about.
Yes.
But a girlfriend that he had met on his mission, but it wasn't that she was interested in the church and things just went awry. He went to dance clubs while I slept
and
met her and courted her and...
It's a good thing you were a heavy sleeper then.
Well, I didn't think so, but apparently was.
For him, anyway.
So he sought it as opposed to, I guess that's the clarification
I did,
that I'm going
obviously
after.
Did not seek this out. I met Johnny, and the feeling was instant. I knew what the feeling was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was two things happened. Immediately. One was this extraordinary elation And the other was devastation, realizing that these two things colliding were not going to work.
Mm-hmm. And those two things obviously being your faith and your sexuality?
Well, being a missionary.
Oh, being a missionary.
Yeah, being a missionary and falling in love with Johnny were not going to be compatible. Okay. This was not going to work.
Right.
But the pull to be with Johnny was greater than that of towing the line with the mission stuff.
And
it was not. It was not about disrespect in that sense. It wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm going to go do this and, you know, screw all the church and the Mormon thing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that at all. I was on Thorazine. I was not functioning as a normal human being would function.
Well, and as you expressed, it wasn't your choice really to go. I mean, it was where your mom had got you to a point to go.
Yeah, I didn't want to be there. When they sent me to Italy, I thought, oh, well, I can make this work.
Uh-huh.
I'm going back home. And they sent me right to Rome where I grew up. So
perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get called, right?
Yeah. I mean, it created conflict because my friends wanted time with me, my childhood friends, and that wasn't allowed. Mm-hmm. And they were furious. One of my friends got married while I was there, and I was not allowed to attend that. We weren't allowed to get in their cars for rides. And I mean, I just kept shrugging it all off. You know, I can't blame everything on the Thorazine. But I wasn't able to function in the same way that I would have had I not been on it.
Yeah.
When I met Johnny, the Thorazine ended. And then my faculties came back. My ability to understand what was happening came rushing back.
So then what happens? Because you're a missionary still, and you're like, I have really strong feelings. We can call it, we can say love.
Yeah, it was love.
That's your word.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we love him, but I'm a missionary, and I got a tag, and that's what I'm doing here. So how, I mean, you said you knew that it wouldn't work, but then what did you do?
We made it work.
For the duration of the mission.
Yep. Yep. And I would not want to lead anybody to think that this was a carefully crafted plot. It on a day-to-day basis, it just kept happening. Johnny and I wanted to be together, so we used the ruse, if you will, of debating communism versus Mormonism.
Mm-hmm.
And these arguments, these conversations went on for hours and hours. Sometimes it was really kind of horrifying because we would just shout and scream at each other, and the missionaries were constantly, our companions were saying, you know, would you please knock it off? Take it outside. Stop. This is ridiculous. This is how, as Italians, we converse.
Mm-hmm.
It is not unusual to shout and raise your voices and shake your fists and carry on. And then moments later, after it's over, then you're back to... We began these conversations and both very aware of what we were feeling and perhaps why we were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I say boastfully. And I realize that a lot of Mormons would look at this situation and say, you know, you're just a mess.
Mm.
You're just a defiant mess. You couldn't keep your feelings in check. You couldn't toe the line. You couldn't obey the rules. You're
sure.
Just, you know, I've heard the criticisms. I know them
I'm
very
sure.
Well.
And not gender specific, not sexuality specific. I mean,
nope.
you would hear that about a man who, you know,
yep.
Fell in love with a woman, or a woman with a man.
Exactly.
Or man, woman, woman.
Because the expectation is that at 19 or 20, we are somehow perfectly capable of doing everything we're asked or told to do.
Right.
Not only was I unwilling to do what I was told to do, I actually couldn't. And that might sound like a cop-out, but when you're on Thorazine, you don't have the same capacity as you would as a normal person. It's not like an antidepressant. It just eviscerates and leaves you with very little to work with. But once the Thorazine was gone, then I had a very clear choice to make. You know, at that point, that's when my reasoning happened, and I recognized that this was the most powerful feeling that I had ever had. I loved Johnny, and I still, to this day, 40 years later, do love him. Mm-hmm. We are no longer lovers, but we are friends who have shared a lifetime together. 40 years is a lifetime.
Yeah.
That began so clearly that there was no way for me to walk away from it, or him for that matter. So what happened was not so much about defiance or horniness or the things that people could attribute it to. It was a profound feeling of love and caring that has endured for 40 years. And I think that's important to recognize, that I was not willing to step back from something that was that beautiful, that that was so deep. Mm-hmm. It was the real thing, and that real thing, that real connection has persisted so long and so beautifully. I still speak to Johnny through multiple sources. We Skype, and his 95-year-old mother comes in behind him with her walker and says hi to me, and we laugh and giggle, and the sound of each other's voice still makes us flush with feeling. Hmm. It's a beautiful, beautiful relationship, and that began very clearly when I was on this mission.
So how does it work, though? Because you're serving,
yeah,
and you're saying, okay, we're gonna make this work because I have these feelings for you, and obviously we know you guys kept in contact after the mission based on what you're saying now. So is it like, okay, well, I mean, we have these conversations, but now I'm going to go do this, and now I've been transferred, so you're going to have to drive a little further to be able to see me. I mean, kind of briefly, what's the mechanics of how you were able to do that? Or, and then secondarily, did you ever feel like you should have just been like, you know what, I probably shouldn't, this seems counter to what I'm doing. Maybe I should just be done with my mission and come back out here.
Johnny asked me to stay, to abandon the mission and come live with him. His folks wanted me. I was instantly accepted as part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also touched on in the film, so I don't want to get, you know, too deep into that. But I could not do it. I was afraid of being disowned from the family.
So it was familial pressure that kept
absolutely.
You
absolutely. Yep. I was not enjoying what I was doing as a missionary. It was extremely embarrassing to me to tell stories that Italians would laugh in my face. So this wasn't people that I didn't understand what was going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
They were laughing in my face because they found what I was saying patently ridiculous. And it was it was horrifying to me to be laughed at.
Sure.
And I couldn't do it. I stopped being able to do it. I could not anymore proselytize. So what I did was I began cooking for all of the districts, and I gained a reputation for fixing fabulous Italian food. And I would spend most of the morning shopping, fixing food, then afterwards I'll clean up the kitchen. You know, y'all go out and
do your thing. I got this.
I became kind of the district housekeeper, cook, whatever.
I noticed you didn't bring any food with you here today, and I'm a little bit upset about that, but we don't you know, I don't want to get violent. I don't want to get a shouting match and then be friends afterwards. We'll just leave that alone.
So the mechanics of being with Johnny were a little complicated. I have deep respect for my companion at the time. I have made fun of him over the years, mm-hmm. and I have deep regrets about that. A very naive but soulful person who had some extreme hearing issues and completely deaf in one ear. And it was easy to step away from him.
Okay.
I would never dishonor him, one, by speaking his name publicly, or two, by criticizing him. He didn't know what was going on. I don't think any of the missionaries in that district did. And we were tight. We were close. We had a ball together.
Mm-hmm.
Ton of fun. I don't think they had any context for understanding what was going on. So it was easy in some ways to circumvent the rules of the mission in that sense, to be with Chandni. However, our relationship was not consummated during that time. It gets into a lot of issues where I don't wish in any way to disrespect what the context of this was, which was a Mormon mission.
Mm-hmm.
I left the Mormon church 30 years ago.
So you stayed in for a considerable amount of time
after coming
back.
For a few years after.
Yeah.
I did. And when I walked away, it's been probably 33 years ago now, I closed the door tightly and that was the end. There was no looking back. But yeah, for a period of time I came back. I'm married because I was in love. I had a beautiful marriage, gorgeous daughter, 3 grandchildren now.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Very much a family man. But there was conflict because of my sexuality. So that, you know, it gets into a lot of things where it wasn't this big plot. It was just simply trying to get my life, to keep my life moving forward, you know, one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And how do I deal with this and how do I deal with that? The mission was very, very complicated. And I knew every moment in my time with Chandni that what I was doing was against the mission rules.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that it flew in the face of everything that Mormonism said, but it was far more powerful than those rules. So I followed my heart, absolutely. And Janaea has done a really beautiful job of sticking to that story in the documentary, in the film. She didn't go off in tangents. And I realized in working with her from the very beginning, from the first time I met her, she was asking all the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
She got it. She got that this is a love story. This is not about Mormonism. This is a love story. This is what took place between me and Chandni.
So, Janaea, let me ask you then. You came to this project, having heard from it, I think you said, from a producer, one of the producers?
Yeah, who Tom was telling this story in front of a dinner party, and everybody was just captivated by it. Because it's really moving.
Yeah, you couldn't ask for a better subject for a film, right? Character,
yeah.
Conflict,
right.
Love, you know?
Right.
It's like, and then what other perfect, you know, element of
right.
your life can we talk about that will play excellently in a film?
And just to kind of continue with what Tom was saying, it's universal for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, you know, the way we approached the film was not like, oh, it's this, like, you know, spicy story about, you know, this Mormon missionary who goes off and has a gay affair.
Mm-hmm.
It's really beyond that. It's about someone who is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but somebody who is struggling with, okay, there's a part of my life that's being true to me,
mm-hmm.
and then there's what I'm being pressured or told to do.
Sure.
And how? And I think that's a pretty universal conflict
yeah,
at
who
that
hasn't
age.
Had that conflict in some fashion,
right?
In their
life. And I think that's why people are, other than it's like an incredible love story.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks
Italy,
to them at
so
a deeper level. It is.
Right?
It is.
On the Adriatic.
Yeah.
And actually, Tom shot all his Super 8 footage while he was there. So that's why we're able to make the film. You actually see Chandni in living, you know, colored 40. Pictures.
Yeah, I have movies from 40 years ago when this was all unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know that at the time that we started doing the project.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I just happened to mention to Tyler, you know, would you guys be interested in some footage that I have of this period of time?
Like, no, thanks. You know what? We've got it. Don't worry about your authentic material from 40 years ago. We'll CGI some stuff. Don't worry.
What's interesting is that this is literal footage of when the affair was taking place.
That's
this
amazing.
This is movie footage.
Yeah.
of us and of the surroundings. And then Janaea and Tyler went back to Italy and did this gorgeous scenic footage of various places where the story unfolds. So what they have done is alternated footage of mine, of us from the story, with me on film telling the story, and then with this footage that they have crafted. And it's really amazing. I mean, when I first saw the closer to the finished product, I was going, wow, how did they do this? Mm-hmm. Because this is a lot to put together in a documentary short. And what they crafted, what Janaea has crafted, is really brilliant. It's beautifully done and very respectful.
I only have just a minute or so more, but I want to ask you this. How will people that don't live in the state of Utah have the opportunity to see this? We have a lot of people who listen to the Cultural Hall who aren't here, mm-hmm. who are going, you know what, I'm interested to see how this film turned out, what exactly this is all about, and I want to know more about Tom.
Sure. It's going to be really easy, because... Okay. Very soon, it'll be on the New York Times OpDocs. It's their documentary forum.
Cool.
And they
what
were
a huge opportunity.
They were a co-producer of the film.
Okay.
Yeah, they saw a really early cut of it and were like, "Oh my God, we love this!" So check out just our website, eldermovie.com, or our Facebook Elder Movie page, and we'll announce that posting really soon. But you can watch the movie in full.
How long is it?
On their site. It is 14 minutes.
14 minutes? A love story in 14 minutes?
Yeah.
I love it.
Janaea did a great job of tightening it, because there's hours of interviews.
Yeah, there is.
And what she did was, because she so clearly understood the important part of the story, mm-hmm. she brought it down, and she kept bringing it down. And I watch it now and I realize that she got it. She got the essence of the story, the important parts of the story. So the story does not feel incomplete. It doesn't feel like it's been hacked. Mm-hmm. It feels like it just got told in the right amount of time.
Perfect.
You know, that it's just right. And that's, in my mind, that's a skilled editor, director, movie maker.
Absolutely. Because there's nothing worse than being in a movie and going, this film should have ended 10 minutes ago.
But, you know, I'm appreciative of, these questions you're asking, because there are a lot of really important details that were left out. Tom's story is quite fascinating. So thank you for
You bet. Thank you for taking a few minutes with us. It's called Elder. You can find it at eldermovie.com. Again, they mentioned a Facebook page, so check that out. Coming up in the second and the third block here at the Cultural Hall, we're going to be visiting with Nikki Yeast, who she used to be an adult dancer and is now a member of the church. So stick around for that in the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Hey, it's me, Richie T, and on the phone with me, it's Nikki Yeast. It's not Yaste. She doesn't look like a Yaste. We don't even know what a Yaste is. But you can find her blog at ldswomanatthewell.wordpress.com. And you probably recently have seen this circle around social media. It's the honest testimony from a not-so-typical Mormon. Thank you for joining me, Nikki.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. I don't want to get into that fight, so just let me be the one to thank you, and you can thank me later.
Okay.
I want to get to know you. What makes you not so typical?
Well, I don't come from the
Pioneer Handcart company that came across the plains. I'm not in Utah. I'm a convert. I'm covered in tattoos. I used to dance.
Everybody dances. You know, Mormons like dancing. We used to circle the wagons on the plains and we danced. What do you mean?
I used to be a burlesque dancer, and I used to strip, and yeah.
Yep.
So exotic dancer is what I'm going to say, because it sounds a little more classier than what
stripper.
I've been called.
That's okay.
In the past.
Some would say stripper, though, correct?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. And so, and I danced burlesque, and so, and when I did burlesque, I was like, oh, I'm not necessarily using a pole, so that makes me a little more classier, but I was still taking off my clothes for money. So.
Burlesque dancing, as I understand it, entirely, though, isn't down to naked, right? Or can it be, or can there be?
I did topless and then a G-string.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not gonna offend anyone. It's okay. It's all right,
okay.
Nikki.
And then in addition to that, I also one of my ambitions was to be a suicide girl, which is a tattoo pornography magazine, and I wanted to be in Playboy and work at the casino, and then my husband and I also struggled with alcoholism and pornography, and so we just had like a whole gambit of this background, and it just kind of is entirely different than how most people, at least on the outside, portray in the Mormon church.
I was just going to say, I don't think that it's entirely that different from actual members of the church, but certainly as people portray themselves.
Yes, yes, and as I have found that out since my blog posted, that I am not as nearly as alone as I thought I was. So
it's interesting too, within the culture of the church, I feel like we have this idea, and I know where it comes from because I remember being taught as a missionary, don't share past transgressions with people. And I think that there's some value in certain situations to say, hey, you know what? I've messed up. Or I did these things, and this is the experiences that brought me to who I am. And I think that's why the virality, if I can use that word, about your blog occurred, is because it's, hey, here is an honest telling of who I am.
Yeah, and I hope to get even a little more honest, you know, because I'm a firm believer. Because when I first joined the church, I tried to do the cookie cutter. I like to can. I don't like to can. I like to sew. For Christmas, my husband tried to get me a sewing machine that has not seen the light of day since he's bought it for me. I'm just not that type of woman. And I realized that I was only giving people half of me. And until I am fully known, I can't be fully loved.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I accepted that this is who I am and I'm going to come to church this way, and this is my past, I've learned that people can love me still, you know, and the outreach and the outpouring of love that has happened just with the blog shows that you can be honest in who you are, and people are still going to love you. So
backtrack for me a little bit, because I hear alcoholism, pornography addiction. You say burlesque, other would say stripper, doesn't matter the term that you would use, but an entertaining dancer, we can leave it.
That's why I said exotic dancer.
Yeah, we can say exotic dancer. And all of these things, vices, if we want to call them that, how does one get from being fully enveloped in that to where you are today?
One gets burned out with the way that I was behaving and the way that I was living. I always was angry. I always felt like I was on the edge of losing my mind. And at one point I did. And so I needed to make that change, and I needed to let that go. And it has not been easy. And I will say that I have struggled the entire way of my walk with Christ, which I think is what has made it a little more special, is because I've had to fight for my faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just tired of feeling depleted all the time and always feeling like I was on the the core of just losing it, losing my mind, losing my... I always felt like I always had to put out all this extra effort to keep my friends around. Like, and I would start drinking a little bit, and then I'd have to drink more to be more accepted. And then eventually I had to do drugs, or I had to dress a certain way, and I was just tired. I was losing my... soul. I know that sounds very cliche, but that's how I felt. Like, I was just empty. I was this walking shell. And I had no emotion, and I was very deadpan. And it's funny, because on my blog, I post those pictures. And I was scared I was going to get a lot of pushback for the pictures. Mm-hmm. In fact, but I got the exact opposite. I got people that were like, you know, in the pictures where you're dressed kind of provocatively, you look totally different than you do now that you found the gospel. And that's how I feel. Mm-hmm. And those pictures, I felt very deadpan and very empty and very unfulfilled. And I needed something to fill me up. And I found that in the gospel. But I only found that when I did it, I only found it when I accepted it as me. And not as somebody else.
Give me an idea give me an idea on time frame of this. We're talking about this now. So when did when did you find the church? Give me.
Well, the missionaries found me when I was 24.
Okay,
well,
and you are now
24. Yeah, and then and I was baptized at 24, but I never converted. I liked the people. I grew up in a very abusive home, and all of a sudden, I felt very uncomfortable as a mother because I didn't get along with my mother, and was very abusive. And so all of a sudden, I'm around these women that were very motherly, mm-hmm. and they wanted to hold my child. And so when I joined the church, I joined because I really liked the people.
Mm-hmm.
And when the people disappointed me, it was very easy to fall away. Mm-hmm. When I wasn't living up to the standard that I thought that the church was presenting me, I was like, well, screw that. I felt like I walked out of the phony lies of the world and walked into this fake it or make it Christianity, and I was not having that, so I fell away. So my husband and I were gone for about a year and a half, and then about in 2013, he deployed, and I said to him, I said, I need to go back to church. We were, you know, I started drinking again. We started fighting all the time. My marriage was kind of hitting this low, rocky point. I said, I'm going back to church, and I'm going back as me. And so that was 2013, and that made all the difference. I had a bishop who, when he looked at me, he believed in me, and he helped me get through the temple. He got us sealed, and it's just been amazing. So that's pretty much the timeline with that.
So you're about, if I'm doing math together, you're about 27?
No, I'm 30.
Oh, you're 30. Okay. So yeah. I'm terrible at math is what I just learned from that.
I'll take 27, but I'm actually 30.
Talk more about going back to church being you.
Okay. When I called up this bishop, my former bishop, and I said to him, I'm coming to your ward, and I'm covered in tattoos. And he laughed at me, and he said, well, you could still come to church and be and have tattoos. And I said, no, you don't understand. I'm covered in them. And he was like, okay. So he gets online, and he stalks my Facebook page, and I had pictures of when I was auditioning for the Suicide Girls on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he found them and everything like that. And later on, he tells me that he did that. But when I came to church that Sunday, I came in a tank top because I said, I'm going to shock them. I'm going to get it all out first weekend, and then I'm going to pull it back because I'm not going to do this whole, like, you know, a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to get it all out and then see who stands. And, you know, the thing is when I first showed up, there were people that were very off put it with me. They didn't want to sit next to me. They didn't want really anything to do with me. By the time I left that ward, I had their love. And I don't think I could have done that any other way than if I just did it as myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I did it. I just showed up in this little tank top dress, and I was like, here I am. I'm loud. I love Jesus, and I'm covered in tattoos. I have this this rocky background, you know, and even it makes people uncomfortable. It does. People have said things to me that under normal circumstances you would not say to somebody else,
mm-hmm.
Simply because of who I was, you know, and so, and I've had to wrestle with that. That would, you know, and I would have thought was disrespectful, but they felt like they could say that to me. And so, and those are the things where I said in my blog, you know, your heart needs to transcend your community, because I had to learn then that these are mortal men and women.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm expecting grace in my life and they're supposed to look at me and see past my flaws, then I have to look past their flaws as well. And so, and some people just need to work on that, and as I do too, you know,
I think that's a huge testament of strength and courage of you that I don't feel like a lot of people could make through.
Okay, yeah. It was hard. Don't let me fool you. That was real. There was a lot of me saying to my husband on the phone, I'm so offended by this person. But I was like, but if I want them to see me, then I need to see them that way as well. You know, I have to love them through the stereotype of this Molly Mormon, just like they need to love me through the stereotype of some alcoholic stripper.
Mm. Easier, though, said than done, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I don't want to call it epidemic, but certainly that your story in being judged and people feeling like they can say things to you that are really offensive and hurtful occurs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Oh, after all the emails that I have read in the last 2 days, absolutely. I thought I was the minority. Turns out I'm really the majority.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is, it's the world is changing. You are going to get more people like me in the church. And when I spoke honestly about my testimony, one of my missions is to make sure that another girl that comes in that's like me, who has a rocky background, possibly in the sex industry, things like that, that she is not pushed out for her past.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where she needs to be. And, you know, it's scary coming to church. You know, there's a lot of times I say, well, come to church with me. And they're like, why would I want to go to church? I already feel bad about myself.
Mm.
Oh, my gosh, what are we doing wrong when you go to church and you feel worse about yourself?
Right.
Jesus came with the fullness of truth and grace. Okay, so we have the truth. It's time we start showing the grace.
How in those situations, I hate to keep going back and dwelling on
But
I feel like your story can help other people. How in those times when people said those things, did you not just say, you know what, screw it. I don't want to do this. I thought I wanted to do it. It's too hard, but people are saying these things. And that is the past. That is who I was, or that is part of what makes me who I am today. But how, you know, what did you do to rise above people's comments?
I stayed in the scriptures. I completely did this study of what God says about me. And when somebody says something to me or behaves a certain way or gets really weird around me, I have to mentally tell myself that what they say is not reality. It's what Christ says about me. That's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to repeat that over and over and over again. And that has only come with practice. And then initially, when people acted that way, I would get very... It's hard because I am mortal, and I live in the natural man all the time. I'm not constantly in this spiritual state. But it is hard not to say something because that is very hurtful and it's very direct. And what... You know, people say things about my tattoos, and I'm like... Well, that kind of just rolls over, you know, because it's outward. People look at me all the time. I'm covered in them. But when somebody hits me with my past, that's internal and that's very personal. And when I let you in and then you turn that against me, it hurts. It really hurts. It takes complete dedication to what Christ says to rise above that. And it's a confidence thing that hurting people hurt people. So when they say something like that, it usually speaks from a place of insecurity. And so it takes discipline to Did I answer your question? I feel like I'm kind of...
No. Okay. No, you absolutely are. I'm listening.
Okay. So, and that's how I managed. And honestly, I go on walks at night, and I call them my anger walks. And it's usually the time of the day where I kind of just let out everything to God, you know, mentally. Why is this happening? I'm so confused, blah, blah, blah. And when I got a clear impression one evening that God said, okay, now that you've been treated this way, what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And his answer was to start speaking out. And so, and that's where I came with the blog. And, you know, and here's another thing that, and this might sound a little radical, but, you know, there is no plan B against injustice. We are it. So if something is happening that is not right, it is our job to speak out against it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so if somebody is speaking hurtful words or behaving a certain way towards a brother and sister in church, it is our job to protect them. And so, and that's why I posted what I posted, and I'm speaking honestly in hopes that other people can speak honestly as well. And I'm hoping that that next girl that comes in behind me, somebody thinks about it before they say something hurtful to her.
I want to take a break for a minute, and I want to come back, and I want to talk about the grace of God in being able to be forgiven, how you're able to navigate forgiveness through the atonement. We'll come back in the third block and talk about that in just a second.
Hi, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. Many of our customers are computer experts with decades of experience that are so smart they know how to build their own computers with their own bare hands. Yet they buy their computers from PC Laptops because of one thing: the PC Laptops desktop lifetime parts and labor warranty. If a video card blows up, normally you'd have to mail it to Chumbawamba for weeks to get service. Imagine having your computer down for weeks. Experts buy from PC Laptops because time is money. And if you have a part fail on your PC Laptops desktop, we will replace it forever for free. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $7.99 with a lifetime warranty at any PC Laptops locations. While supplies last, $7.99, you can't beat that deal. Please visit us at any one of our locations right now. Call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Desktop computers with a lifetime warranty for just $7.99.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, and we're talking with Nikki Yeast. Let me give you the URL for her blog again. It's ldswomanatthewell.wordpress.com. And go check it out. There's more than just this one blog, and the blog that we've been talking mostly about is an honest testimony from a not-so-typical Mormon. You've shared your past, and I think that there are some people who, given a past like that, one that, you know, doesn't fit the typical mold of whatever, it doesn't have to be a Mormon person, could be any religion or could be any sort of frame of mind or organization or society or whatever, that doesn't allow themselves to become different from what their original, you know, from their actions previous. So how is it that you're able to overcome that?
How was I able to... To overcome,
you know, being your own worst critic, to be allow yourself to be forgiven and to be forgiven?
Well, oh my goodness, that's such a...
Loaded question, sorry.
Yes, because, well, it comes in stages, and I don't ever really, you know, it starts with the acknowledgement that what I am doing is not right. What I am doing is leaving me feeling empty, and I need something that is better. And so for myself, it's an ongoing process of letting these things fall away and finding forgiveness. I found forgiveness is immediately when I believed what Christ said about me, and that I believe He is who He says He is, and that because of what He's done, even I can take my place in at God's kingdom, or at His table in His kingdom. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it comes down with the absolute assurity that from this day forward is a new beginning. Now, I messed up today, but his blessings are new every morning, mm-hmm. which means that I get it over and over and over. And I'm grateful for that. And that knowledge is what keeps me with that feeling of forgiveness. And I know lots of people that feel like they constantly, I've had somebody say to me in the past, I will forever be working to make my kind of make myself feel better for the things that I've done. And I'm like, oh, you've totally missed the whole point of Christ's mission. He didn't come just to die for you. He came to show you who you truly are. We are sons and daughters of God, and we have a fresh beginning, a fresh start. And I think it's when people feel like they're running this course and they're constantly doing, they feel like they're trying to earn their way into the kingdom. And I believe that we've already earned that with our belief. We get what we believe, not what we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that knowledge is had, then forgiveness is found. And it's a constant having to tell yourself that I'm forgiven for that. I'm forgiven for that, because Satan works on the psychological level. And if he can get us to doubt ourselves and doubt each other, then we can't doubt him. So if he can keep us in that psychological turmoil and have us believe and stay in the past and, you know, in bondage to that, then we can't move forward to the blessings that God has already prepared for us. You know, it talks about in the Book of Mormon that God prepared a land of bountiful for Nephi and his family. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a land of promise that God has prepared for us. And we don't even want to get into it. We're like the Israelites who just want to wander in the desert for 40 years. We don't even want to walk into the promised land because we're just happy out here. And we don't need to stay there anymore. And we just need to move forward. And it takes effort. It really does to say, I'm moving forward. And it's small steps. I've learned to be incredibly patient with myself and to stop beating myself up so much for when I do mess up.
What has the journey been like for your husband? You give the indication that he had similar vices with you.
Yes. Yes, he has it from a totally different perspective. He grew up in a divorced family as well. You know, he had a DUI and he had a drug problem. He was actually arrested for drugs and things like that. For him, it comes at a totally different angle because now he has to be the priesthood of the family, and that's a totally foreign concept to a man who grew up with nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, he's supposed to lead prayers and Bible studies and things like that. It has been a challenging road for him, and it's not up until very recently that he's been able to forgive himself, because he always felt like he never qualified for the celestial kingdom. He's like, I'm just going to hang out down here with the other guys.
You can come visit me. I'll be in the terrestrial kingdom.
You'll be good up there, but I'm just going to be your baggage back here.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until recently that he realized that the only thing holding him there was himself,
mm-hmm.
his own belief system, because he already was qualified for the celestial kingdom. You know what I mean? He was already, you know, the ceiling and the endowments and things. He was already there. And, you know, so it was challenging totally on a different level, because to be a man in this church is very different than to be just a man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to be a man in this world. In this church, I could not imagine having the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I'm not envious for it, you know. I'm just not somebody that is wanting that on my check. I have enough, and so So he really struggled with, where do I fit in with these men that seem to be leading these beautiful prayers, and their families are all put together, and you know, he smoked cigarettes and all these other kind of things, and small steps at a time, and to stop beating yourself up. You know, realize that in Christ, you are perfected. As long as you're in Christ, you're perfected. So you have to stay close to Him.
When you talk about that you've had a big response from people reading this blog, give me an idea. How many emails do you think you've had come through?
Well, I can tell you it's been shared on Facebook 60,000 times.
Jeez.
I've had probably 300 emails. I've just been reading story after story after story, heart-wrenching stories, raw stories, where I'm just like, and I want to put every single one of those people in a room and just be like, okay, now talk to each other. Because although the situations are unique, the same underlying issue. I'm struggling in my marriage. My children are acting out. I come from an abusive background. I have problems with sexual addiction. And I just want to put them all together and say, talk to each other, because we all have in us the ability to help heal each other when we're honest.
In the break before we turn the microphones back on, you talked about reformers in the church.
Yes. I had somebody ask me if somebody wants to leave the church, like, what would you tell them? I would tell them to never leave, because the church needs reformers. They need people to stand up and make a difference, to lead an army behind them for what's right. And so if there is an issue, be brave and speak up and protect that person coming in behind you that might experience that same issue.
I think a tremendous amount of that power comes from, you know, we started the episode and we don't know each other at all. And there's hesitation to be like, hey, this is honestly who I am. We want to portray it in a way. We want to sugarcoat it a little bit. And I feel like the reason why this blog post in particular is so powerful is because of its vulnerability, first of all. And then it's just raw honesty.
Well, you know what? If I can't come to church and get grace confirmed and reconfirmed in my life, what's the point? I come to church to be restored and refined. I don't come there to be put on display. So that's my mission, is to show that we come here as sick, broken people, and we reconfirm the beauty that surrounds us, and that the beauty is Christ. So it's only, and I believe that, and I wrote that on my blog, it's only through broken cracks light's able to shine through.
That's why go ahead.
No, so I was going to say, so why pretend like those cracks don't exist? Everybody, every email that I had was just somebody who was thirsty, that was desperate. I mean, these people don't know me. But they want to relate on a deeper personal level. And I'm grateful for these people, and I'm grateful for their emails.
I love, even with the name being LDS Woman at the Well.
Yes, that's me. I'm totally that woman. I am so that woman. And I did a major study of that woman before I decided on that name. So
it's a tremendous amount of power. The blog will be attached with this episode at theculturalhall.com, so people can check that out. They can read that and follow up with what you got going on now. So now that you've had this success, continue to write. Has it changed your focus into what you're going to do?
What do you mean, in the future?
Yeah, as far as future goes, are you like, wow, you know, there's some definite power with this writing, or is it a casual thing for you to work through your path, or what's sort of the plan?
Well, my plan is to continue to write and to be honest. But my ultimate goal is to eventually start an outreach for women caught in the sex industry. I feel like there needs to be a healthy dialogue. You know, when somebody is looking at, we as a church, and it's not just a church, it's the world as well. We get so hyped up on the man or the woman that's sitting on the one side of the computer watching, and we completely ignore that there's two people there that need the atonement, the man or woman watching and the porn star. Mm-hmm. And I want to go for her because she's my sister, and she deserves to hear the gospel just as much as that person that came across the plains with the hand carts, you know, or return missionary. She needs it, and we need to go get her. And so that has always been kind of my ultimate goal, And every time an opportunity has presented itself, God has made it happen. So I'm trusting that he's going to make this happen as well.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Nikki, there's a question, or three questions, rather, we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall. So I'll ask those of you right now. The first question is, do you have a calling currently? And if so, what is it?
I do not have a calling currently because we were in the process of moving.
Coming to Zion or going somewhere else in California?
I'm going somewhere else in California.
Okay, we'll get you. We'll get you eventually.
I know. We want to move there.
The second thing, then, is if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I would pick, and this is honest, the library position. That is like my dream calling. No opening prayers, no closing prayers. Get to hang out with books and hand out chalk. That sounds great.
I love it. The final question that we ask everyone who steps in the Cultural Hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith is, goodness, my favorite part of my faith is Jesus. My favorite part of my faith is Jesus. My faith wouldn't exist without him. I love him. I serve him. My goal is to glorify him in everything that I do. My favorite part of my faith is Jesus.
We end every episode of the Cultural Hall with saying things that you hear frequently in repetition within Mormon culture. Things like, okay. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body. Is there one that you notice, something that you hear all the time?
Now that you've said that, no, I can't think of anything. Oh, but we say it all the time. Can you throw me out another example?
Oh, so we always do, we hope this episode is nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week.
I
put you on the spot. It's fine. A most recent one that we've added is, I would be truly ungrateful if I didn't tell you how much I love the Cultural Hall.
Okay, yes. I'll do that. I got one.
Okay.
I would like to seal my testimony with the Cultural Hall tonight.
Thank you very much. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. Oh.